God. This was Ashley's backup plan all along. She punched the snow. Shit. He disabled all of the cars, just in case we managed to escape in one. But this didn't make sense. Why, then, would Ashley nail-gun the tires of Sandy's truck, too, if she was an integral part of the kidnapping plot? After they'd taken all that care to meet up here, in the frozen Rockies. Jay peered over the door.
What is it?
Nothing. Darby scrambled back to the front of Sandy's truck and resumed digging, double time, her heart racing, thudding against her ribs, as she tried to appear calm.
Jaybird, tell me, what's your favorite dinosaur?
I like them all.
Yeah, but you have to have a favorite. T-Rex? Raptor? Triceratops?
Ystrepta spondylus.
I have no idea what that is.
That's why I like it.
Describe it, please.
Darby just needed to keep the conversation going, scooping armfuls of snow, her frantic thoughts churning. He's coming for us, right now. He's catching up to us, and he's carrying that nail gun.
It's a carnivore, the girl said. Walks on two hind legs. Jurassic period. Three fingers on each hand. Kind of like a raptor.
You could have just said raptor, then.
No, it's Ystrepta spondylus.
Sounds like a shitty dinosaur.
You couldn't spell it,
Jay said, pausing.
Oh, your phone found a signal.
Darby jolted upright and ran to the passenger door, reaching through the shattered window, snatching her iPhone from Jay's fingers. She didn't believe it until she saw it. A lone signal bar, blinking urgently.
Your turn to dig, she said.
The battery's 1%.
I know.
The door croaked, sprinkling more glass, and Jay jumped out. Darby held her phone with red fingers, mashing 911 with her thumb, and the phone vibrated in her hand, startling her. A new message bubble blocked her touchscreen. She was about to swipe past it until she saw the sender's number. It was 911. An answer to her text message, the one she'd tried to send hours ago tonight, and must have only now successfully auto-sent. Child abduction, gray van, license plate, VBH-9045, State Route 7, Wanapa rest stop. Send police. The answer? Find a safe place. Officer coming, ETA 30. Darby almost dropped her phone. ETA, as in estimated time of arrival? 30 must be minutes, right? It couldn't be hours or days. 30 minutes?
Is it working?
Jay asked, panting as she dug. Darby couldn't believe it. It felt like a hallucination. She blinked, afraid it would all disperse like a dream. But the letters were all still there, trembling in her numb hands. Her text had successfully sent at 3:56 a.m. She'd received the 911 dispatcher's response at 3:58 a.m. Just minutes ago. Oh, thank God! The cops will be here in 30 minutes! Her chest swelled with gulped breaths, nervous electricity in her bones. She had questions, tons of them. For starters, she didn't know how this reconciled with the CDOT's snowplow situation. Were the plows due in 30 minutes, too? Were they due first? Were they all charging up Backbone Pass at once? Cops and road crews? As one big convoy? She didn't know, and truthfully, she didn't care. As long as the cops got here and shot Ashley Garver in his smirking face.
Oh, Jay, she whispered. I could kiss you.
The girl's voice pitched.
Darby, stop!
What?
Jay faced her now, standing in the curved glare of the Ford's headlights, staring with snowflakes collecting on her shoulders, alarmingly still. Darby tried to keep her voice calm. Jay, I don't understand.
Don't move.
What is it? She whispered.
He's behind you.
Ashley was just hugging the Pazlode's trigger, preparing to spear a 16-penny into the back of her skull, when Darby turned to face him. Her auburn bangs feathered off her cheekbone as she spun, her eyes coming around and up to find him, catching a slash of moonlight, her skin marshmallow soft, that white scar still invisible, unless she squinted or smiled. Like an actress hitting her mark, a gentle flourish flamed by a cinematographer's eye, the way Ava Green greets Daniel Craig in Casino Royale. Just a turn. But Christ, what a turn. Under Darby's jacket and jeans, he could locate the luxurious shapes of her body, her shoulders, her hips, her breasts. He wished he could print this moment, this snapshot of heartbreaking beauty, and keep it forever. Like all the truest art, you're never quite sure how it makes you feel at first, until you untangle your feelings later. And he'd have plenty to untangle. He wished it could just be something simple like lust, because lust can be satiated with Pornhub. But ever since he'd kissed her in that grungy restroom, his feelings for Darby had become naughtier and more complex than that. Hi, Darbs. He forced a smile. Long night, huh? She said nothing. No fear in those eyes. Not even a tremor. She just looked him up and down, assessing him, like this CU Boulder redhead had somehow already anticipated this encounter hours ago and had a contingency plan prepared, which was, of course, impossible. Tonight had been a swirling, sweaty shitstorm of blind chance and left-field surprises. Not even a magic man like Ashley himself could stay on top of everything all the time. But still, he thought, I wish you hadn't turned around. It makes this harder. He raised the cordless nailer again. He depressed the Pazlode's muzzle with his left palm, tricking the safety, squeezing the two-stage trigger, drawing careful aim on her left eye. Darby didn't flinch. That'd be a mistake.
What?
You don't want to kill me.
Yeah? Why's that?
I hid your keychain, she said. I know where your astro keys are. And if you kill me now, you'll never find them. Now that Sandy's truck is stuck here and you shot up my Honda, you've trapped yourself here. The van is the only way you and your brother will ever escape this rest stop tonight. Silence. She raised her hands, like a mic drop. And from the front of Sandy's truck, Ashley heard a strange, scraping chitter. A sound he'd never heard before. It was Jay, laughing. 4:05 a.m. 30 minutes. 30 minutes. Survive the next 30 minutes until the cops get here. This repeated in her mind on the walk back to the rest area. Ashley had ordered her to walk in front, with Jay at her side, while he held the nail gun to their backs. He also carried her iPhone. He'd snatched it from Darby's hand before she could delete 911's text message. He swiped through it now, the screen illuminating the snow a spectral blue as they walked, and she quietly braced for Ashley Garver's apocalyptic reaction when he learned the truth, that the cops were incoming at this very second. But nothing happened. They walked in silence. She heard him lick his lips, adjusting his grip on the nail gun as he scrolled through her phone, and she realized, he's not reading my texts. The possibility of Darby texting the police hadn't occurred to him. He was only scanning her call records, searching for successful voice calls to 911, which, of course, she'd already tried dozens of times, back at 9 and 10 p.m. He was scrolling through them, inspecting the timestamps.
"Call failed," he read. "Call failed, call failed, call failed."
"You have no idea." She wanted to laugh, but couldn't. "You're holding it in your hand."
"Good, good."
He sounded like he was relaxing. She squeezed Jay's unhurt hand, lowering her voice. "Don't be afraid. He can't kill me, because I know where his keys are."
"That's true, Darbs," Ashley interjected. "But I can hurt you."
"Yeah," she wanted to say. "You have half an hour, asshole." She desperately hoped 30 minutes was a realistic estimate for when the police would arrive here, and not just a dispatcher's wild guess. Between the jackknifed semi and the blizzard, there were a lot of possible complications that might not be visible from the alert desk inside a warm sheriff's station somewhere. What if it wasn't 30 minutes, but 40? An hour, 2 hours? Ashley groped her as she walked, the nail gun prodding her backbone, his fingers exploring her pockets, front and back, her legs, the sleeves of her hoodie.
"Just making sure,"
he breathed down her neck. He'd been searching for his keys. "The only thing keeping me alive right now is that stupid keychain." She imagined those keys now, resting in the snow outside the restroom window where they'd landed, slowly vanishing, one snowflake at a time.
"You should just tell me now what you did with them," he whispered. "It'll be so much easier for both of us."
For a long moment as they walked, Darby didn't quite grasp what he meant by that. Then the realization came to her slowly, like a great shape emerging from the depths, taking monstrous form. When they got back inside the visitor center, Ashley was going to torture her. This was a certainty. He would give her a yellow card or a red card, or worse, until she confessed the keychain's location. And the second she did, he'd kill her. She felt her heartbeat hitch in her chest, like a trapped animal. She considered running, but he'd just nail gun her in the back, and he was far too strong to fight. The rest area came closer, taking form in the moonlight. It looked falsely serene, like a model inside a snow globe. She saw the cars, their Astro, her Honda, the buried dumpster she'd once mistaken for Ashley's car. The icy flagpole, standing like a needle. The bronze crowd of nightmare children. And emerging from the darkness, half buried in windswept snow, with its dead lamp and barricaded window, the Whanapani Visitor Center itself. Big Devil, the name meant. Then Ashley pivoted her. "Turn, turn." And they followed the footpath from the parking lot to the front door. The final 50 feet. "I've saved Jay already," she reminded herself. "I've gotten the police involved. They have guns. They'll take care of Ashley and Lars. All I have to do is survive." This long walk back had taken 10, maybe 15 minutes, she guessed. So she was already halfway there. Just 15 more. As the building crept closer, Darby realized something. She wasn't even afraid anymore. She was exhilarated, actually. Drunk with a strange sort of excitement. She'd already been shot at, pepper-sprayed, and asphyxiated with a Ziploc bag. And like a goddamn cockroach, she'd survived everything Ashley and Lars, and even Sandy, had thrown at her. Against all odds, Darby was still in this fight. It was too personal, this 8-hour psychological duel with Ashley. All of the night's tricks and turns and wins and losses. And now she had to witness her grisly checkmate. She wanted to be there the second it happened, to see the shock on Ashley's face when the first approaching police car flashed red and blue. It thrilled her, in a dark way she couldn't describe. "You'll hurt me, Ashley. You'll hurt me bad. For these last 15 minutes or so, I'm all yours. But after that, you're mine. And you have no idea."
"Oh, hey."
Ashley stopped.
"You got a text message back on the highway."
The blue glow returned. He was reading her phone again. Darby panicked. 911 must have sent a second text message. Of course. The well-intentioned emergency dispatcher had no way of knowing that Darby herself was under duress, that her phone was now in the killer's hand.
"From," Ashley squinted, "from someone named Devin."
Then he held the cracked iPhone out to her, and when her eyes pulled into focus, whatever remained of Darby's world disintegrated. It happened. Mom died.
"Oh," Ashley said. "Awkward."
Then he broke her iPhone in half.
"Keep walking."
The front door shut like a gunshot. Jay screamed when she saw Ed. Ashley grinned, all white teeth, grabbing her by the collar and forcing her to look.
"Cool, huh?"
Ed Schaefer was slumped in a sitting position under the Colorado map, the front of his Carhartt shiny with dark blood. He tilted his head up at them as they entered the room, and his lips weakly quivered, like he was trying to speak.
"Don't move, Eddie."
Sandy knelt beside him, trying to wrap the right length of medical gauze around his ruined jaw. The white first aid box was open on the floor, its contents scattered.
"Don't move. I'm trying to help you."
Over her trembling hands, Ed's eyes darted up to Darby. A flash of recognition, and he tried again to speak, but only managed a moaned gurgle. A mouthful of blood, ropey with snake-like clots, squirted through his locked teeth and splashed down into his lap. Jay cried, struggling to look away, but Ashley wouldn't let her.
"See," he said into her ear, "that's a red card."
Across the room, Lars watched all of this like a scarecrow, holding the .45 in one hand and a white jug of bleach in the other, as Ed's strangled scream reached a fever pitch in the confined air. All of this horror barely registered with Darby. She wasn't there, not really. She was somewhere else, and this world had gone slippery, tinged with oil. Lights smeared into shafts. Her body was a cold suit, her heartbeat and breaths falling into a slow, mechanical rhythm. She imagined a tiny creature, her truest self, perhaps, pulling levers and viewing camera feeds inside her own skull. She'd seen that in a movie, Men in Black. She recalled watching the DVD years ago, with her mom on the basement sofa, sharing a Snoopy blanket.
"I like Will Smith,"
her mother had told her, sipping a drink that smelled like peaches.
"He can rescue me anytime he'd like."
She was gone now, Darby realized. The body of Maya Thorne would remain in some hospital in Provo, Utah. But the tiny being that lived inside her head was lost forever. Now Ashley squeezed her right hand, interlocking his icy fingers into hers, like teenagers on a date. And he guided her through the room, past Ed and Sandy, past the stone counter, past the coffee machines. She didn't know where he was taking her, nor did she care. She numbly noticed her right foot was leaving red footprints. She'd sleepwalked through Ed's pooled blood. Like a nightmare, she just wanted it all to be over. For it to please be over. She twisted her neck, glancing back at the old Garfield clock on the wall. It read 5:19 a.m. For winter daylight savings, she subtracted an hour. That made it 4:19 a.m. She'd received 911's text message at 3:58 a.m. The walk back had taken 21 minutes. Subtracted from 30, that made 9 minutes left until the police arrived here. 9 short minutes. Survive 9 more minutes. That's all. Ashley halted her abruptly. Here, at the janitor's closet door. Still half open, from when she'd unlocked it. He gently twirled her now, like a slow, dizzy tango, and pushed her against the wall. "Sit here," he said. She didn't. "Sit, please." She shook her head and tears tapped the floor. Her sinuses ached. "You're not going to sit?" She shook her head again. "You're not tired?" Oh, she was exhausted. Her nerves were shredded, her muscles sagging meat, her thoughts blurry. But somehow, she knew that if she sat down now, it would all be over. She'd lose her will. She'd never stand up again. For a moment, she considered just blurting it out, saying what couldn't be unsaid. "Ashley, I threw your keys out the window in the men's restroom. They landed just 10, maybe 20 feet away in the snow. You can kill me. I'm done." Across the room, Jay wept. Rodent Face knelt by her, trying to calm her. "Don't look at Ed. Don't look at him, okay? He's fine." Ed took in another tortured breath through his nose, as Sandy wrapped another bandage around his jaw. And then he made a strange sound, like a wet burp. The clean white gauze blotted red. "He's fine, Jaybird. Wanna, play circle time?"
"We're all?"
Sandy sighed, wiping Ed's blood on her pants.
"We're all going to prison for the rest of our lives. You know that, right?"
Ashley ignored her. He was a black shadow, towering over Darby, studying her, still gripping her wrist, trapping her against the half-open closet door. His eyes moved up and down her body. Darby stared at the floor, at her size 8 Converse, slashed by ice and browned with dirt and blood. 10 days ago, they'd been new in a box.
"Were," Ashley cleared his throat. "Were you close with your mom?"
She shook her head.
"No?"
"Not really." He leaned closer. "Why not?" She said nothing. She fought his grip on her wrist, and he gently retaliated with his other hand, pressing his nail gun against her belly, his knuckle on the trigger. Something about the thing's color, a sickening Crayola orange, made it look like an oversized child's toy. He repeated himself, his hot breath tingling on her neck.
"Why not, Darbs?"
I was kind of an awful daughter." Her voice trembled, but she steadied herself. Then, like a levee breaking, it all came out. "I took advantage of her. I manipulated her. I called her horrible things. I stole her car once, with a shoelace. I'd leave, for days at a time, without telling her where I'd gone or who I was out with. I must have given her ulcers. When I left for college, we didn't even say goodbye. I just got in my Honda and drove to Boulder. I stole a bottle of her gin from the cabinet on my way out." She remembered drinking it alone in her dorm room, the sour burn in her throat, under a bleak wallpaper of strangers' graves, of names and birth dates drawn in charcoal shadows of crayon and wax. Ashley nodded, sniffing her hair. "I'm sorry."
"You're not."
"I am."
"You're lying."
"I mean it," he said,
I'm genuinely sorry for your loss.
I wouldn't be, Darby said through her teeth, if it was your mom.
She felt more tears coming, stinging her irritated eyes, but she fought them.
She couldn't start now. That would come later. Later, later, later. After the cops kicked down the door and raked Ashley and Lars with bullets. After Sandy was handcuffed.
When Darby and Jay were safe in an ambulance with a wool blanket draped over their shoulders.
Then, and only then, could she properly grieve.
Ashley furrowed his brow.
How'd you steal a car with a shoelace?
She didn't answer. It was an unremarkable story. Her mom's Subaru had been broken into once before, and the dumbass thief had mangled the ignition with a screwdriver, trying to hotwire it. It took two keys, one for the door and one for the ignition. Darby had acquired one, but not the other.
"You rotten little bitch," her mom had said from the porch, watching her own Subaru pull into the driveway at 3 a.m.
"You rotten little bitch."
And, Ashley put it together, "that's how you broke into our van, huh?"
She nodded, and another tear hit the floor.
"Wow, it's like tonight was meant to be."
He grinned again.
"I've always believed things happen for a reason, if that's any consolation."
It wasn't. Death is supposed to transform you from a person into an idea. But to Darby, her mother had always been an idea. Somehow, after 18 years of living in the same tiny two-bedroom house in Provo, eating the same food, watching the same television, sitting on the same sofa, she'd never truly known who Maya Thorne was. Not as a human being. Certainly not as the person she would have been, had Darby never existed. Had she really just been the flu?
"Oh, God, Mom, I'm sorry."
She almost broke.
But she couldn't. Not in front of him. So it stuck thickly in her chest, like a wet, knotted towel. A dull ache in her soul.
"I'm so sorry for everything." Ashley inspected her for another long moment. Another thoughtful breath. The dense odor of his sweat. She heard his tongue move behind his lips, like he was wrestling with words he couldn't quite say. When he finally did speak again, his voice was different, overcome by some emotion she couldn't identify.
"I wish you were my girlfriend, Darby."
She said nothing.
"I wish so badly that you and I, that we'd met under different circumstances. This, all this, isn't me, okay? I'm not evil. I don't have a criminal record. I've never hurt anyone before tonight. I don't even drink or smoke. I'm just a business owner who got involved in a little thing that went south. And now I have to clean up this mess in order to protect my brother. Understand? And you're getting in the way of that. So I'm asking again, before it gets ugly, where are my keys?"
She stared back, rock hard, giving nothing. Over Ashley's shoulder, she could see the clock, the characters on it. Orange Garfield still offering those roses to pink Arlene. Her blurry eyes focused on the minute hand, almost vertical now. 4:22 a.m. 5 minutes until the cops arrived.
"Did you hear me, Ashley?" Sandy stood up. "Are you having a psychotic episode? Keys or no keys, it's over. We're all going to prison."
"No, we're not."
"How do you figure?"
Ashley didn't answer. Instead, his dark silhouette turned back to Darby, and his grip on her wrist changed. His fingers walked over her skin like clammy octopus tentacles, rearranging themselves around her, tightening, and he lifted her hand up, up,
sliding against the wall. Sandy raised her voice. What are you doing to her?
Darby craned her neck to see. He was holding her right hand against the supply closet door, right up against the door's hinge, pressing her fingertips flush against the golden jaws, where the brass was spotted with old lubricants and brown cavities of rust. She saw her pinky fingernail, painted crackle blue, her vulnerable flesh seated in there, like a tiny head in a guillotine. 5 minutes. She looked back at Ashley, her gut twisting with panic. He had the nail gun tucked in his armpit now, leaning to grasp the doorknob with his free hand. You might not remember this, Darbs, but earlier tonight, you made fun of me for my phobia of door hinges. Remember that? Remember what you called me? She closed her eyes, squeezing acidic tears, wishing it would all go away. Yeah, oops, huh? But it was real. It was all really happening. Right now, and it could never be undone. Her artist's fingers were about to be crushed by unsympathetic metal. Sandy gasped. Jesus Christ, Ashley! Don't do it! Jay begged, fighting Lars. Please don't! But the tall shadow of Ashley Garver wasn't listening. It leaned in close to Darby, licking its lips. And she smelled something sweetly bacterial, fetid, like decaying meat. You're giving me no choice. If you tell me, I promise I won't hurt you, okay? You have my word. Where are my keys? 5 minutes, 5 minutes, 5 minutes. She forced herself to open her eyes, to blink away the tears, to steady her gulped breaths, to look the monster in its green eyes. She couldn't take the bait. She couldn't submit and play this game, because the instant he knew where his keychain was, he'd kill her. There was no other option. Ashley Garver was many, many things, but above all else, he was a pathological liar. Please, Darbs, just tell me so I don't have to hurt you. Because if you don't, you're forcing me to slam this door. He knelt down close, so she could see the pained glimmer in his eyes. She knew this was all staged. Another head of the Hydra. This negotiation was just like any other act she'd witnessed tonight. Another version of Ashley to be warned for a while and then discarded. The way a python crawls out of its wrinkly gray skin. The entire room fell silent, awaiting her answer. Inhale. Count to five. Exhale. If I tell you, she whispered back, you'll just slam the door anyway. His eyes darkened. Smart girl. Then he did. 4:26 a.m. En route, Highway Patrolman Corporal Ron Hill asked dispatch twice to clarify the 207 call. But there was no further info available. No name, no background, just a vehicle. Gray van, a license plate, VBH9045, and a rough location, sent to 911 via text message. No further contact, no calls, all follow-ups had failed. Likely due to spotty cell service and tonight's record-breaking winter storm. It sounded like a prank. The nastiest calls always sound like pranks at first. His cruiser churned uphill, cylinders firing, sand and gravel chattering noisily against the undercarriage. In theory, CDOT has a particular order to its road maintenance at this altitude. Plow, then de-ice, then sand and salt. But apparently their A-team took Christmas Eve off. The whole effort seemed like an exercise in herding cats, while paying them overtime. Snooping in on their CB frequencies, it reminded him of his old CO's phrase
for when Marines move out of formation, risking exposure to enemy fire. A gaggle fuck. Ron was 36, baby-faced, with a wife who'd studied graphic design but settled for being a wife, and a 5-year-old son who wanted to be a cop when he grew up. She hated him for that. He'd been reprimanded twice for sleeping on speed traps, and once for what the after-action report called unnecessary verbal force, which Ron still believed to be an oxymoron. Before tonight's 7 p.m. shift, he'd found his wife's suitcase in the closet, upright and half-packed. Thinking about this, he almost missed the blue sign that came up on his right, crested with snow, glaring in his high beams. Rest area 1 mile. Hey, fingers snapped in Darby's face. Lost you for a sec. Her right hand felt like it had been submerged in boiling water. At first, it hadn't hurt at all, just the whoosh of displaced air and the cannon blast of the door slamming beside her right eardrum. And then the pain arrived a moment later. Deafening, shattering. At once, sledgehammer blunt and needle sharp. It hurled her out of her body, out of this world. For a black instant, she was nowhere. And in another, she was back in her tiny childhood house in Provo, 6 years old again, racing up the creaking staircase, hurtling into the warm blankets of her mother's bed, taking refuge from a witching hour nightmare. I've got you, her mother whispered, flicking on the nightstand lamp. It was just a dream, baby. You imagined it all. I've got you. And then the bedroom bled away like paint, and Darby was back in this little Colorado rest stop, with fluorescent lights and stale coffee, this hellish place she could never escape. She'd slumped into a crouch when she lost consciousness, her back to the door, a sour taste in her throat. She was afraid to look up at her right hand. She knew what had happened. She knew the door was shut, that at least 2 of her fingers were crushed inside it, pulverized between merciless brass teeth. I've got you, Darby.
Earth to Darbs, Ashley snapped his fingers. I need you lucid.
Ashley, Sandy hissed. You're insane. You've lost your mind. Darby found the courage to look at her hand, blinking away watery tears. Her ring and pinky fingers were gone above the hinge, inside the door's scissor jaws. Gone. It gave her a nauseous, shivery jolt. Her body just ended there. It couldn't possibly be her hand, but it was. She couldn't imagine what her fingers looked like inside the door. Skin burst, tissue shredded, bones broken into splinters, tendons crushed and tangled into red spaghetti noodles. There was somehow less blood than she'd expected, just a long, shiny bead running down the door frame. She watched it inch down the chapped wood.
Ashley, Sandy barked. Are you even listening?
Darby reached for the doorknob with her unhurt left hand. Swiping, missing it twice, finally closed her numb fingers around it. To open the closet door and free her mangled hand. To reveal the hideous, heartbreaking damage. But the doorknob didn't turn. He'd locked it, the bastard. Ashley strode across the room, pocketing the key, leaving her pinned there.
All right, Sandy. It's time I leveled with you.
Oh, now it's time? After all this?
Sandy, let me explain.
Oh, sure.
She hurled the plastic first aid box at him, which he swatted away, clattering off the stone counter.
You gave me your word, Ashley. No one was supposed to get hurt through this whole thing.
He edged closer. I have a confession to make.
Yeah? What's that?
He spoke slowly, precisely, like a surgeon delivering bad news. Our meeting here wasn't about finding a discreet public place for you to hand off your storage key to me. I mean, yes, that was your plan. And maybe I'll put those steroid shots to use to keep Jaybird alive for as long as they last.
Sandy's eyes widened with icy terror.
But see, I had a plan too.
He kept approaching.
And it turns out your plan was only a part of my plan.
Sandy took another step back, paralyzed by his wide shoulders, his sheer presence. And the fluorescent lights flickered overhead. Silence.
You know, Ashley shrugged. I really thought you'd try to run by now.
She tried. He was too quick. He grabbed her elbow with that muscular grip Darby knew all too well, and with an Aikido spin, hurled Sandy into the floor. A shoe flew off. Her other foot kicked the vending machine as she went down, turning the glass opaque with cracks. Ashley was already on top of her, forcing her to lie face down, his knee on her back. Ed struggled forward, but Lars aimed his .45.
Nope, nope.
Now Ashley grabbed the woman by the scalp, both fists clenched in her black, bowl-shaped haircut, and yanked her head backward against his braced knee.
You called... Sandy, now, you may not remember this, but earlier tonight, you said some very nasty things about Lars, about his condition, because of choices our mother made decades ago, when he was just an embryo. How fair is that? Come on, Sandy. You know I love my baby brother.
She screamed against his thick grip.
Take it back, Sandy.
He twisted her neck harder.
Take back what you said.
She cried out, all vowels.
Try again. I can't hear you.
She gasped.
I take it back.
Okay, well, that's a nice gesture.
Ashley glanced to Lars.
So, baby brother, do you accept Sandy's apology?
Lars grinned, savoring the power, and shook his head twice.
Please, please, I...
Ashley adjusted his hold on Sandy's scalp, planted his boot higher between her shoulder blades.
For leverage, Darby realized, and tugged hard.
The woman's neck broke, eventually. It wasn't quick or painless. Sandy screamed until she was out of air, her face growing a rotten purple, her eyes bulging before going flat. Her fingers clawing, kicking. Ashley paused once, adjusting his grip before yanking her head harder, 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 90 degrees backward now, until her vertebrae finally dislocated in an audible, wet string, like popping knuckles. If she had still been conscious, she might have experienced the paraplegic horror of her body going numb. It was a straining, clumsy, grunting process, and it took a full 30 seconds before the woman was visibly dead. Then Ashley let go, letting Sandy's forehead thud against the tile, her neck full of separated bones. He stood up, red-faced. Lars was clapping his scarred hands now, giggling with excitement, like he'd just seen the card trick to end them all. I just witnessed a murder, Darby thought dully. Just now, in plain view, Sandy Schaefer, San Diego school bus driver, co-conspirator to this tangled mess of a ransom plot, was gone forever now. A human life, a soul, extinguished. Whether it was door hinges or Lars's fetal alcohol syndrome, utter a phrase that displeases Ashley Garver, even in passing, and he doesn't forget it. He makes a note, and later, he takes his pound of flesh.
Hey, baby brother, He caught his breath, pointing down at the woman's warm body.
Want to hear something funny? Not that it matters now, but did this Jesus freak tell you what she was planning to spend her share on?
What?
Women's shelters. Six figures donated to battered women's shelters all over California. Like a real-life Mother Teresa. Can you believe that?
Lars laughed thickly. Darby glanced up at the Garfield clock, but her vision smeared with Vaseline tears. Maybe 3 minutes until the cops arrived? 2 minutes? She couldn't tell. Her mind was a swirl of razor blades. She closed her eyes again, wishing desperately to be six again. She wished this was just another witching hour nightmare she'd awoken from, before high school, before Smirnoff Ice and curfew and marijuana cookies and Depot Provera, before everything became complicated. Wrapped up in her mother's arms, blinking away tears, breathlessly describing the ghostly lady with the double-jointed dog legs who'd strode through her bedroom. No, it was just a dream. I've got you, baby. It was just a dream. Just inhale, count to five, and...
Ashley rattled the closet door. Like sandpaper on exposed nerves. A jangling, complex pain that writhed up her wrist like electricity. She screamed in a choked voice she'd never heard before. Sorry, Darbs. You were dozing off again.
He wiped sweat from his forehead.
Trust me, this was supposed to be an easy little one-off. We'd pick up Jaybird from her mansion, drive 12 hours to a storage unit in Moosehead, where Sandy had a stash of money, cabin keys, and Jay's stupid adrenaline shots, all under a fake name and a 5-digit combination lock. 19872. We'd grab that, disappear up to Sandy's family cabin, and spend a week or two negotiating a sweet ransom payoff.
Right? He rattled the door again. Another violin screech of pain.
Wrong. After we surprise adopted Jaybird, we were halfway across the Mojave. We learned there was a break-in at Sandy's stupid sentry storage place. And all of the combination locks had been compromised. Figures, right? So they were back to using default keys, which only Sandy had, all the way back in California. And problem two? Mr. Nissen called the cops, even though our instructions explicitly told him not to, and now Sandy was under all kinds of scrutiny since she's the goddamn school bus driver who saw Jay last. Meanwhile, we're out here in the Rockies without a place to stay and a sick kiddo in the van puking up a storm. What were we to do, huh?
He reached forward, as if to rattle the doorknob again. Darby winced, but he showed a flash of compassion and didn't.
So Sandy cooked up a last-minute family Christmas trip to Denver as a cover story for the police, so she could meet up with us at a public place and give us the storage unit key so we could access Jay's meds and our supplies. Which brings me to problem three, Ashley pointed outside. This goddamn winter wonderland!
The pieces clicked together in Darby's mind. Snowmageddon trapped them all here at the handoff point, with poor Ed as Sandy's unwitting prop. And then I showed up. The sheer scale of it dwarfed her and made her head swim. This viper's nest she'd wandered into at 7 p.m., strung out on Red Bull and exhausted. She watched the long beady drip of her own blood. It almost touched the floor now.
I'm not stupid, Ashley said. I've seen enough movies to know everything leaves a digital fingerprint. Since the police are involved now, collecting Jaybird's ransom from Mommy and Daddy is pretty much impossible. And the cops are all over Sandy, too.
She stole Jay's cortisol shots from the school nurse's office a few months back, so they'll pin that to her pretty quick. And then she'd probably squeal on us, which makes her a liability. So we came up here to kill her after she gave us the key. Make it look like a robbery gone wrong, gunshot to the face deal. But I wasn't expecting the blizzard. Or for her to bring Cousin Ed. And I wasn't expecting you, obviously.
It all interlocked and made a macabre sort of sense. Except for one last unknown, burning in the back of Darby's mind with unresolved tension. Then, if there's no ransom money, what are you going to do with Jay?
Hey, Ashley snapped his fingers in her face again. Answer mine first, okay? Where are my keys?
What are you going to do with her?
He smiled guiltily.
It'll just make you uncooperative.
Yeah? What the hell have I been all night?
Trust me, Darbs. Just trust me on this one. He stood up, hefting the orange nail gun, and paced across the room. Because hallelujah, I've figured you out. I could slam that door on each of your fingers until the sun comes up, until you have nothing but bloody hamburger hands. And you still won't tell me what I need to know, because you're just not that kind of person.
You're a hero, a bleeding heart. Your whole night went to hell because you broke into a van to save a stranger.
So guess what? Here's your chance to save another one.
He crouched beside Ed and pressed the nail gun to his forehead. The older man's eyelids slid groggily, half open.
Now, Darbs, Ashley said, I'm going to count down from five. You're going to tell me where you hid my keychain, or I'll kill Ed.
She shook her head, thrashing left to right. Helpless denial. Up on the wall, the Garfield clock now read 5:30, 4:30, a.m.
It's been 32 minutes. The police are late.
Ashley raised his voice.
Five?
No, I can't.
Four?
Please, Ashley.
Three? Come on, Darbs.
He punched the nail gun's muzzle against Ed's forehead in cruel, bruising impacts.
Look at him.
Ed now stared across the room at her through watering eyes. Poor old Edward Schaefer, the ex-veterinarian with an estranged family waiting for him in Aurora, Colorado. A human cover story. Sandy's unwitting collateral damage. He was moving his lips again, muffled by clammy red gauze, trying to form words with a tongue impaled to the roof of his mouth. She could feel his eyes on her, begging her to tell Ashley what he wanted to know, to just please tell him.
If I tell Ashley, Darby whispered to Ed, they'll kill us both.
This was true. But she wished she could tell him another, greater truth, to reassure him.
The police are almost here. They're a few minutes late. Any second now, they're going to kick down that door and shoot Ashley and Lars.
Two?
I can't say it. She looked at Ed, realizing what this meant, and a racking sob rattled through her lips.
Oh God, I'm so sorry.
Ed nodded slowly, knowingly, dripping globs of stringy blood into his lap, like he somehow, impossibly, understood. She wanted to scream it to him.
Any second now, Ed, the cops are coming to save us. Please, God, let them get here in time.
The patience drained from Ashley's voice.
One.
10:23, approaching the structure on foot.
Corporal Ron Hill clasped his shoulder radio and tripped on a snowbank, catching himself on a gloved palm. The ice was rock hard here, like sculpted cement. He was just a few paces from the Wanapana Visitor Center. He reached the front door, stepping under the saucer-shaped lamp. Again, no further information from dispatch beyond the initial 207 text message, which was frustrating. He rapped the door with his mag light.
Highway patrol.
He waited for an answer.
Then, a little huskier, police, anyone here?
It was still technically just a public building, but his right hand moved to the heel of his Glock 17 as he gripped the doorknob and sidestepped into the crunchy snow, using the brick wall as cover. In entry drills, doorways are called fatal funnels because they're the defender's natural focal point. No way around it, unless you blow down a wall. You're literally walking into the bad guy's sights. If there really were a 207 hunkered inside this rest stop, he'd be watching the door right now down the barrel of a shotgun, perhaps crouched behind his hostages for cover. Or just an empty, harmless room. Not that dispatch knew. A sharp wind tugged his Gore-Tex jacket, peppering dry snowflakes against the door. And now Corporal Hill wasn't sure what he was waiting for. For Sarah to finish packing her goddamn suitcase? To hell with it. He twisted the doorknob. The door creaked open.
Zero,
Ashley said. But Darby wasn't listening, because she just realized something. She stared past Ashley now, at the Colorado map on the wall behind Ed. And her heart sank with a heavy, cloying dread. State Route 7 was a thick blue line on the map, slithering through mountain topography, and the rest areas were marked as red circles. Wanapana, Wanapani, Colchuk, Nisqually. This one was Wanapani. Big devil. Not Wanapa. But she'd typed her text message to 911 earlier in the night, around 9 p.m., before she'd learned this, back before she'd returned inside, re-examined the map, and realized her error, that she'd transposed two similar-looking, similar-sounding Native American names, both concerning devils. My text sent the cops to the wrong rest area, to a completely different one, 20 miles down Backbone Pass, on the other side of that jackknifed 18-wheeler. The police weren't coming after all. They were still miles away, unreachable, misdirected. No one was coming to arrest Ashley and Lars. No one was coming to save them. She wanted to scream. She sagged against the locked door, feeling her fingers twist inside the doorframe. Another jolt of meat grinder pain. She felt weightless, like dropping into free fall, plunging to some unknown depth. She wished for it to all be over. No one is coming to save us. We're all alone. I got us all killed. Ashley sighed petulantly, like a frustrated child. And now he jammed the nail gun against Ed's temple and squeezed the trigger. Stop! Darby gasped. Stop, I'll tell you where your keys are, if you promise you won't kill him.
I promise, Ashley said.
It was a lie, she knew. Of course it was a lie. Ashley Garver was a sociopath. Words and promises were meaningless to him. You might as well attempt to negotiate with a virus. But she fell apart and told him anyway. The entire room falling silent. Her voice a fractured whisper. In the snow. Outside the restroom window. That's where I threw them. Ashley nodded. He glanced at Lars, then Jay, then back at her, his lips curling into a boyish grin. Thank you, Darbs. I knew you'd come through, he said, raising the nail gun to Ed's forehead anyway. Thwump. 4:55 a.m. Don't kill her until I'm back with the keys,
Ashley instructed his brother.
I need to be sure she's telling the truth.